guys. K2RIW here. And at this time, we start the TechNet on LIMARC. For those who haven't heard the TechNet before, and we hope there are very few of those, a person gives me their call letters, name, and a confirming yes, which means they do have a question or a comment for the net. So that's the way we do sign-ins here. Do we have any call check-ins? Give me a call letters and names, please.
K2MLB, Frank, yes.
Good evening, K2KEY. KC2MDP, Steven, yes.
WS2N, leaving Dick Paul, no.
KC2MWA, good evening, Dick, and no.
GDS, Alliance, yes.
Okay. We've got, didn't write down very well. I think it's Frank, Mel, Steve, Paul, MWA, I think it's Bob, QVX, and we've got yeah, I think we got them all. So, let's start off with the first one. Frank, K2MLB, what would you like to talk about tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Thank you very much. I'll tell you what I'd like to talk to you about, ask you about tonight is a situation that I have with interaction of some 80-meter antennas. If you can picture this, just looking at my house from the front, so to speak, over the driveway I've had an old Kaigang 8040 trap doublet for some 20 years. That's the antenna with the big long, 3 or 4 foot trap. In the front of my house, there's three clusters of oak trees, and they're just about 35 to 40 feet apart. And I have three dipoles running from those trees in the front to some trees in the back. But the trees in the back are all in the right corner. So the three wires don't stay 35, 40 feet apart, but they are on a skew, and they get within 10 or 15 feet at one end and 35 on the other. Anyway, I decided to try and find out what was happening, and if I transmitted, I put 1,000 watts of RF into the center antenna, let's just call it because it was, that's the 4080 trap doublet, and each of the other antennas were going to individual tuners, but for this test I disconnected the coax and fed it to a Bird 43 watt meter. And when I put 1,000 watts into the center antenna, the 160 antenna, the antenna on the left of it goes over the house, and it's a trap 160 80-meter antenna, and it was absorbing 200 watts. I was able to measure 200 watts of RF into that, just the feed line. And then on the right-hand side, I didn't mention this, but the antenna that's 35 or 40 feet to the right of the center driveway, I was fooling around. I had a G5 RV up, and that particular antenna absorbed about 60 watts, making that measurement. Then anyway, what I did progressively, I transmitted a kilowatt into each of the antennas separately and then measured what I was measuring with the other ones. And just to give you another idea, when transmitting into the 160-80 trap antenna is 165 feet long, but it's got traps at, at about 130 feet for 80 meters. But putting a kilowatt into that antenna, the 4080 trap doublet in the middle measured about 210 watts. And that is with the Bird watt meter terminated with a 52 ohm load. And then just to see what would happen, I removed the load from one end of the Bird, and the power absorbed dropped to 100 watts. And then I shorted the terminals on the Bird, and it was even higher than with the 52 ohms, 260 watts. So my question is there any way to determine from these measurements, you know, there obviously is interaction. Is there any way to determine whether it's harmful or whether it's helpful? The distance, you know, would be almost ideal, 35 feet apart on one end. It would almost be like a three-wire beam. But I have no idea what's happening. I mean, I make on-the-air checks, and guys see typically 5-6 dB difference depending on what antenna I'm transmitting into. So I hope that didn't confuse you, but is it possible to... I have a follow-up question on trying to eliminate the interaction, but I just wonder with what I've told you, if you get that picture.
Yes, I think I do, Frank. When you put a kilowatt into an antenna, assuming you are really transmitting a kilowatt and it's got a reasonably low standing wave ratio, or you're using a matchbox so that almost all the kilowatt is getting into that antenna and it's not feed line loss, assuming your feed line losses are very low, a fraction of a dB, 200 watts present on the other antenna is a 200 to 1 kilowatt ratio, 5 to 1, and that's very close to 7 decibels. By my standards, anything more than 10 or 15 dB of coupling is a very significant coupling. 7 dB down, that's almost the kind of coupling I would get between a driven element and the director of a Yagi. That's a lot of signal getting over there. So, are those antennas isolated from each other? And the answer is very little isolation. They are tightly coupled. Now your real question is, what's happening with that tight coupling? If the unused antenna was going into a dummy load, by all the laws of physics, all the energy absorbed by that antenna is being terminated, and so by conservation of energy, that which you terminate into a dummy load is turned into heat, is no longer available for signals on the air, and it's significant. If the unused antenna is going into a short or an open circuit, then all the energy it picks up, in theory, is being re-reflected back into the antenna, and the majority of it into space. So you can say this for sure. The presence of the unused antenna when you transmit it into any one of them is, to some degree, modifying the radiation pattern. Now, is that good or bad? There is a slim possibility that the re-radiation is a co-phase radiation to some particular direction that you want to talk to a guy. If, for instance, the antenna is north-south, the wire actually set up, and you think you've got a peak of beam east and west, and due east of you is something like South Africa. And so if the guy in South Africa is getting a signal from the main antenna you're transmitting, and if he's also getting a signal simultaneously from the antenna, your antenna or antennas that you're coupling energy into, and if that re-radiated energy is co-phased to him, he could be seeing a stronger signal than if those other parasitic antennas were not there. Or, if the re-radiation to him happens to be out of phase from the two parasitic antennas, the signal he gets will be weaker. Now, the good news is that most of the time, even on HF, your antennas do obey reciprocity. That's not completely true. By reciprocity, I mean, if I transmitted a signal from Long Island to South Africa, and I'm transmitting a horizontally polarized signal, after it interacts with the ionosphere and the Earth's magnetic field, the signal might arrive in South Africa, primarily vertically polarized, even though I transmitted horizontal. So, in the transmission case, you get a, we'll say, a clockwise twist of 90 degrees of polarization, and when you transmit from South Africa back to Long Island, it may not be a simultaneous clockwise 90 degrees. It may be some other slightly different degree, because Faraday rotation doesn't necessarily obey reciprocity. So because of reciprocity failure, because of Faraday, what I'm about to say is not very true. I guess you could choose someone that's closer, but there's not as much Faraday, and hopefully you've got primarily a reciprocal situation. When you've got a reciprocal situation, what you can do is to tune your receiver on the desired antenna you're going to transmit into, but you're looking at the S-meter you're receiving, and now you can experiment with the unused antennas. You can short them, open, short them to a certain length of line, open them to a certain length of line. In other words, you are changing the phase angle of the signal that's picked up by the unused antenna, and after it comes down your feed line, you're re-reflecting it back by a shorter and open, you're not absorbing it, and by changing the line length or changing whether or not you're terminating with a capacitor or an inductor, you have the ability to phase shift. Therefore, to a small degree, you have a phased array. It is my belief that most of the time, when you do your fiddling with the unused antennas and their termination, and you peak the S-meter on your receiver, most of the time when you then transmit it to that antenna, that guy who you just peaked is going to get the strongest signal from you. For the most part, that will be true, except for the reciprocity failure. Because of the reciprocity failure, the only way you could really confirm that is for the guy you're talking to in South Africa tell you by some means what is the signal strength as you make the changes. He could transmit back to you on an Oscar satellite, and he gives you a tone, and the amplitude of the tone is proportional to signal strength, or the pitch of the tone is proportional to signal strength. There's various ways it can be done. We do that all the time on 10 gigs. Whenever we're lining up a 10 gig transmission, we usually use 144 megacycles, 144.260, as what we call liaison frequency. So, at many times, you get on 144.260 and say, is there anybody up in New England on 10 gigs at this time? And on 2 meters, the guy will come back to you and say, yeah, I'm on Pac-Manadnac. I'm at about 30 degrees bearing from you. I'm aiming my 10 gig antenna down to you right now. I'm running key down. Feed back to me what you hear, and I'll peak the antenna. So, these guys on 10 gigs, we do that all the time. There's nothing stopping you from doing that on 80 meters, 40 meters, or whatever. On some of the band, even by telephone, you feed the signal back and peak it. Or you run the experiment where you try this, try that, and say, what is your S-meter reading? And he, on the next transmission, tells you. And as long as it's not too much QSB, you can have a lot of fun with those answers. So the tight coupling you've got, and to me, 200 watts out of an unused antenna, when you put a kilowatt into one, that's a very tight coupling. That's a 7 dB coefficient of coupling. And so therefore, you do have a phased array here. You've got multiple elements. You can even go one step further. You can build a very fancy phasing harness in which you decide how much of your kilowatt you feed into each one of those three antennas and what phase angle you do it with. So by having a complicated antenna tuner-like thing that's got two or three outputs, you can adjust the amplitudes and phases as you transmit into those various antennas, and therefore peak the signal to the particular guy you're talking to. I think you see where we're going here. Amateurs of you've made very little use of phased arrays, Frank. You're about to break the ground here on this particular one, and so even though you think you've got a disadvantage because you've got tight coupling to those other antennas, I think there's ways that you can use it to your advantage. I know there's ways you can use it to your advantage. The only thing left to find out is, are you going to get 1, 3, or 5 dB, excuse me, of increase when you do this? But you have an electronically steerable antenna there, Frank. And so with a little bit of experimenting, you can have a grand old time. I wonder if some of that made some sense. K2MLB, K2RIW, the TechNet.
Yeah, K2RIW, the TechNet, K2MLB, returning. Oh, that's fine. You gave me some additional, you know, insight. Because what I was going to ask, I just so happens I have each of those antennas coming to a separate antenna tuner. And what I was going to say, in fact, I guess I have a hard time visualizing it, so let me ask anyway. If I wanted, in other words, because each one has a tuner, if I deliberately detuned try to tune out the resonance of the unused antennas, so to speak. Then I would be able to, in other words, if I wanted to just check each antenna individually and try and rule out the interaction, even if I was doing it on a receive signal, say, forget reciprocity for a second, if I just detune the two unused antennas with the tuner in the shack, would I effectively be doing that? I guess because I'm seeing two things, Dick, and I'm not that clear on impedances. I would understand that at the shack, you know, where the tuner is, that measuring it at that point, the reactants would be tuned out. But the fact that there's still, you know, 102-foot piece of wire up in the air, you know, could it be interacting despite what I'm trying to do down below with the tuner?
I see where you're going, and you've got another good thing in your favor here. The fact that there's a length of feed line, and you're doing this retuning of the unused antennas in the shack instead of at the top of the feed line, that doesn't matter. Assuming your feed line is low in loss, whether you do the tuning in the shack or at the top of the antenna, it's the exact same amount of tuning, but different in phase. In other words, if you hang the right capacitor or inductor right at the antenna, you'll tune the antenna high or low, and you could get it out of resonance, and therefore change the amount of signal it absorbs. Because a capacitor at the top of the feed line, depending on the length of the feed line, you're going around the Smith chart, so to speak, by the time you get down to the bottom of the shack, that capacitor at the top of the feed line may look like an inductor. So therefore, maybe you have to hang the opposite polarity of reactants in the shack in order to get the effect you want. But that doesn't matter. As long as you've got complete freedom to change length of cable and magnitude of capacitor or inductor, short circuit, open circuit, capacitor, inductor, as long as you've got complete free tuning of an antenna in the shack, it is essentially as good as having that tuner up at the top of the antenna, as long as the feed line is low in loss. So there's even another factor. Not only can you allow the signal to be absorbed, and you can shift the phase angle of the signal that gets re-radiated, or you can correspondingly knock the antenna out of resonance and decrease the amount of signal that gets absorbed. All of those combinations are a kind of electronic tuning of direction of radiation. You really have a phased array here, and so what you thought is a disadvantage, a whole lot of undesired coupling to these unused antennas. From my point of view, Frank, you've got a hidden gold mine here. You really have a phased array. So you can change the tuning of those other unused antenna tuners, untransmitting antenna tuners, and or you can build some kind of a power divider network so that you're feeding all those antennas simultaneously while you're doing those tunings. You've got lots of knobs here where once you finish tuning those knobs, you will, in certain directions, enhance or, in certain directions, create a null. You've got a double advantage here. You can either make the signal in the desired direction stronger, or because you're, again, electronically tuning, if you're getting a whole lot of QR Mary, a lot of interference for some particular direction, by properly adjusting these controls, you probably can tune a null in that particular direction. The desired guy you're listening to may go down a couple of dB, but if this real strong QR Mary station goes down by 15 dB, you come out with 13 dB of signal-to-noise ratio improvement. So you're doing spatial filtering as well as electronic filtering in frequency. You're spatially filtering in angle when you're adjusting the antenna tuners on the unused antennas. And if you use them with a power divider, you can even go one step further. So, what we were discussing last week with the four square and what Barry N2MB was talking about is an intentionally designed array which gives you electronic directional antenna tuning. Yours is not quite as clean as that, but you still have the effect, and you can use it to your advantage. I recommend you start a whole bunch of experiments and come back and let us know what happened. It could be an awful lot of fun. And so
So, let's see, West Orange, New Jersey is about to find out about a brand new phased array. KQMLB, KQRIW, and the TechNet.
KF2RL.
KQRIW, KQMLB. Yeah, well, I knew, you know, I almost lucked out on the distance of the trees. You know, 35 feet apart is almost the ideal spacing for an 80-meter beam. And again, you know, the one wire is 135 feet long, and one's 112, and one's 102. You know, so the lengths were not... But let's put it this way. I had a longer one that could act as the reflector and the shorter one that's the director. And so that's what I was kind of hoping for. But the human liked me very, very much because the fact that it was absorbing so much power, I just didn't know how to go next. So thanks very much, and I'll certainly be playing with it. And I'm looking for fun, and I'll be back. K2MLB.
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to what you find out, Frank. That could be a lot of fun. And there's a zillion ways you can play with that. Steve, I know you've got a question on this subject or a contribution. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, very good, Dick. Good evening to you. Good evening to Mel and everyone else out there on the net. My question tonight concerns antenna theory. I know your favorite subject. Basically, I got three questions for you, so you know, let me know if I'm right or wrong in any three parts, okay? Let's see, question number one, let's say I have, for the sake of argument, 146 megahertz. I take two dummy loads, I put them into a T connector, the transmitter should see 25 ohms, I should get a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. Question two, if I do the same exact thing, you know, no phasing harness or anything, with two antennas, it should be the same exact thing, right? I should the transmitter should see 25 ohms, I should get a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. Now let's say, what would happen if I would either, you know, double the frequency or divide the frequency? In other words, you know, what would happen if I would put 73 megahertz through that through those two antennas and 292? You know, would I get anywhere close to 1-to-1 SWR, or it just doesn't work that way? Back to you.
Sorry about that, Steve. I created confusion. The very next person on the list, KC2MDP, was named Steve. The person who wanted to add to the previous subject was KF2RL, Steve. I've got your question, Steve, number two. Steve's on the list. We're going to get to you in a second. The new Steve, KF2RL, you wanted to add something to the previous subject, so let's go back to that for a second. KF2RL, KQRIW.
Okay, K2RW, KF2RL. I tuned in a little bit late. I assume he's using some kind of a low-band HF antenna. He's got a space about 30-some-odd feet away, obviously in the near field. I'm just questioning how he measured the 200 watts, because that seems a 70 dB coupler, let's say for a dipole, maybe 32 feet. I still think that's a little bit, that's pretty tight coupling for 30-some-odd feet.
Without a doubt. He put a kilowatt into the antenna he's transmitting. He's got these two adjacent antennas very close in wavelengths, and he's measuring the power output from the unused antennas with a Bird Model 43 watt meter into a dummy load. So let's say he transmits through the middle antenna, and he takes the feed line from the left antenna through a Bird 43 into a dummy load and measures in one case 200 watts, in one case 60 watts, in one case 210 watts. So we're talking about numbers of coupling coefficient here, like 6.9, 7 dB down, whatever. Very, very close coupling. That closer coupling is what you get with a bunch of elements of a phased array that are all built into the same bed spring, so to speak. So he really has a phased array by which he can change the parasitically coupled phase angle of the re-radiation of the unused antennas. Let me call them parasitic antennas or parasitic elements. Or he can intentionally decide to transmit through multiple antennas simultaneously and adjusting the amplitude ratios and the phase ratios. The bottom line of all this is he is spatially filtering. He is doing electronic steering in space. I know in some directions he can create some peaks. I know in some directions he can create some valleys. It's possible the peaks are only going to be a couple of dB, but the valleys that he can steer in certain directions, in some cases, are going to be very deep. So So therefore, in the case of some very strong QRM during a contest, I know we can do some advantages with this. So that's how we made the measurement. I can't think of a better way of making the measurement than a Bird 43 into a dummy load. I wonder if you agree, Steve. KF2RL, K2RIW, SegMet.
Okay, I agree with you. I'm just surprised by the numbers, that's all. 7 dB coupler, you know, like design couplers, you know, all kinds of stuff. It just seems like almost impossible from that distance. I don't know. I'd have to actually model it, but it just seems, I don't know, just doesn't seem right. 7 dBs? I don't know. I agree with the way you measured it, though. If it's correct, that's what you measured, that's what it is.
Yeah, I think it could be real. I personally have done some experiments in which I intentionally wanted coupling between antennas. That was one of the devices I was working on with reference to RFID, where I was putting devices inside of boxes, stacking boxes together in a row, and I wanted the energy to flow down the whole string of boxes. So I had antennas on the left side and the right side of each box, with a feed line in between. And by carefully adjusting things and making sure that the alignment of the boxes is just right, I could feed enough signal down five boxes in a row such that I attached my RFID reader to the first box and I could read the tag that's five boxes downrange, the RFID tag that was connected to the fifth box. And later on we did experiments.